C-158. Number 6A.
The chapter on marriage begins with that introductory paragraph where Miss Sadie writes that Jesus' concessions to material method were for the advancement of spiritual good, showing that the great teacher, the teacher which has been depicted in the chapter before in Atonement and Eucharist as the great teacher and demonstrator, that this great teacher was willing to wed himself to every human condition such that it helped for the advancement of spiritual good. See, it shows that when the Christ in the second chapter comes to us and speaks to us and makes us move and act and be acting, and that it acts there where we are. It acts where we are. It acts in every human and material condition where we are. Always for a resurrecting and exalting effect for the advancement of spiritual good. We had, when we took the chapter on marriage, a paragraph from Miss Sereny, which is very interesting, which I want to read again. She says, "The Christian Science healing is the spirit and the bride, the marriage, the spirit and the bride, the word, and the wedding of this word to all human thought and action." You see, to all human thought and action. It was a wedding of the word to whatever situation we are in. That says, "Come, I will give thee rest, peace, health, holiness." Or another reference from Mrs. Salenius' writings, as she says, "The spiritual idea of Christ." The spiritual idea of Christ. Well, that's what we have seen in Atonement and Eucharist. Spiritual idea of Christ. "The spiritual idea of Christ entered into the minutiae of the life of the personal Jesus. It made him an honest man." You see, it was for the advancement of spiritual good. "It made him an honest man, a good carpenter, and a good man before it could make him the glorified." But it did make him the glorified finally. And such a sentence is really indicative of the whole chapter, because the whole chapter shows how the Word, bringing forth the idea of the Christ, beginning to act there where we are, beginning to act in our personality, in a human mentality, in a human situation, but acting there not through the human or as the human, but acting there in spite of the human, so that the human gives way to a higher standard, and gives way to the higher standard until error is so dissolved that we find our primeval unity with God. And so the last tone in the chapter on marriage is that spiritual adherence. And the question is, spirit the creator or is matter the creator? See, the third chapter is that chapter which speaks to us where we are today. It speaks to the human. The Christ comes to the human and speaks to the human, but not with the help of the human, not for the human, not to improve the human, but so that the human yields and yields and yields until it has yielded completely. And then we enter into the fourth chapter where it says there is only spirit and the infinite one spirit. So it makes the personal Jesus first a better man and a good carpenter before it could make him the glorified. This third chapter is a very necessary chapter because it shows the gradual steps that have to be taken in spite of the human. We are no more in prayer where we go and shut ourselves up in silence in the sanctuary of spirit and shut out sinful sense. That's the beginning of it, and that's the most necessary point. In that sanctuary where senses are shut out, spiritual sense begins to talk to us. The Christ comes and talks and says, go and do. And as we go and do, we have to go and do it. Jesus acted boldly against, in spite of the physical sense, in spite of doctrine, in spite of the resistance which he encountered. And that made him an honest man, that made him a savior, that made him the glorified. That's the third chapter. He wedded the word to all things that had to be dealt with on the human plane, there where we are. Wisdom in human action begins with what is nearest right under the circumstances, and thence achieves the ultimate. But let's be clear, you see, that this is not an improving of the tilling of the soil, an improving of matter, but that this gradual development is a gradual disintegration of error, and not the gradual integration of truth. Truth is always completely integrated, completely one. But in human consciousness, all what has to happen is that our false concept of being and of man has to disintegrate, so that the age-old and primeval integration of God and his universe is being seen clearly, comes to the surface more clearly, and is acknowledged more clearly as the one and only. Marriage is very necessary, because we would like to be absolutists and sidestep the human issues. We would like to say, I'm only concerned with the absolute and with God, and God knows no evil, so I don't want to be bothered at all with any form of evil, and shut my eye to every sort of evil. Well, that is not Christianity. That which characterizes Christianity in comparison to every other higher religion is that Christianity alone tackles evil. It always comes down from the Mount of Vision and handles evil. All the other religions try to go up to the mountain and stay there. Jesus always tried to go up into the mountain and pray, and then come down and handle the situation. That's the big difference between all other higher religion and Christianity. And that is, to my sense, the only reason why Christianity is the only one that will survive, will supplant all other higher religion. And it's the only reason why in the countries and in the civilizations where Christianity is predominant, natural science, technical science, optical science, any science has made any progress. Because science alone tackles evil. That's to me the very logical conclusion of why the countries where Christianity is predominant, science, natural science, could find a foothold. Because science must handle evil. Now, this chapter on marriage shows now that fundamentally and primevally there is a unity of God and man, and not only unity of God and men, but among men, that there is a primeval harmony of relationship on the plane of idea. And that the question is that we don't put that asunder. And the chapter on marriage shows through seven subjects which qualities have to be heeded by us in order that we don't put asunder that what civilization has achieved. That the seven subjects show those qualities which we have to use, which will help to integrate better and better the good in men and in nations, in the human, so as to bring out, as a result, a higher sense of manhood, a higher sense of unity, a higher sense of peace. To my sense, this third chapter is the chapter of civilization, the question of civilization, the question of politics, the question of culture. It deals, to my sense, with what would be the question: how can civilization survive? Or how can we contribute to a better, more balanced civilization, to a more harmonious, more joyful, more peaceful civilization? Because what is true in the relationship within the realm of a family are also the governing factors within the realm of a larger community, of a nation, and of the world. Before I came here, I was reading Gordon Brown's book on Civilization Lies Foursquare. And while I was reading that book, I just could see from page to page that what that whole story tells is perhaps pinpointed the best in this chapter on marriage. As I went on reading and reading and reading it, I felt, well, these are all questions which more or less are dealt with in the chapter on marriage. And really, the chapter on marriage starts with that chastity is the cement of civilization. And the chapter on marriage is all that which deals with relationships among single people and parties and communities, which has to do with civilization. And the nice thing was, quite apart that I was very inspired by that book, and I never got such a wonderful sense that time and space is oblivious, is obsolete. The time and space is obsolete when I have read that book. I left it with a sense, with a higher sense, a more impressed sense, that all what civilization has been through thousands of years, that is a question which each one of us has to solve here, right now, and can solve it. That we can put out time and space out from our universe of consciousness, and all the questions which civilization had to deal with and had to overcome and had to meet the challenge, that they are the very same challenges and factors that each individual has to meet if he wants to progress spiritually. That what he shows through that book of 6,000 years of civilization is really that 1,000 years are like one day. That those 1,000 years are just like one day in our life, and with that we jolly well have to prove what those 6,000 years have proven or failed to prove, that we have to prove it in our life, here and now. If I may say another word on that book, I hope you don't take it as I would like to be personal about Gordon, but I think it's right to acknowledge what is good. He has shown there something which we have to see clearly, namely that we work out the signs of our time, as we have said yesterday, and not the signs of another time. And he shows through the line of development so finely, so neatly, so impersonally, that what is now our main problem is that we really work out the age in which we live, namely the age of truth as love, that emanation of the infinite self-containment. Namely, that the sign of the time is that we devote our whole energies and love to demonstrate that which in the line of spiritual unfoldment is now at the point of breaking forth, of being born, namely to research and see what is the matrix that brings forth the calculus of spirit. That infinite self-containment, the matrix, which has an infinite emanation as a calculus of idea. I feel if we do that, if we are aware of that, we will contribute to the age the best we can contribute and anybody can contribute at the present moment. In that book, he relied quite a lot on Toynbee, because I think Dr. Toynbee is really a spiritually minded historian, which is very seldom among historians. And he shows how Dr. Toynbee shows that there were 21 civilizations since the birth of civilization, and that only 7 are surviving at the moment. That all the rest went down. Why did they go down? Why does a man go down? Why does a business go down? Why does a family go down? Why does a nation go down? Why does a community go down? Not every family that has been built could stay and grow happily. They had breakdown. So many business that was established had a breakdown. So many nations that has been established was breaking down. And the world we have been established is on the point of breaking down too. What's the solution? And Toynbee shows that, according to his investigation, there were always 4 phases in these civilizations that came and went. That there was always a genesis, that always a new idea sprang up, creative. Second, there was always a period of growth, namely a period where this idea which has been conceived grew, but it could only grow because of deep devotion to that idea, because it was nurtured, because it was strengthened. And then comes the third period in a civilization, the very critical one, namely where every civilization had to meet challenges. And the point is, can a civilization meet the challenges and survive, or can't it meet and break down? And then comes the breakdown. And lastly, the death blow, the disintegration. So it shows that every civilization that went down, that is, out of 21 went down 14, as far as I know, quite a lot. Only 7 survived up to now, and of these one doesn't know what is going to happen. It is interesting to see that there is a cycle of genesis, growth, breakdown, disintegration. And while I was reading that book, it was at the same time as I was preparing for this talk, I just could see that what Toynbee shows is the first 4 chapters. That in the first, that he shows historically what we metaphysically begin to see in the first 4 chapters. That first is always the genesis of something. That is, first we always go to God to get, as she says right on the first page, that our thoughts are being molded and exalted before they take form in words and deeds. In prayer, we always go to God in order to be inspired to have that genesis in our thought where something is being born. That's why I felt also that prayer is a seed plot of the textbook. When a new idea is being born to us, we have to be careful that we don't leave it at prayer, but that we nurture that prayer so that something is being strengthened in us through atonement and Eucharist, and something becomes stronger and stronger in us, and so it begins to be strengthened, it begins to grow in us. We act courageously, we do things, we move, we exemplify what we believe in, and so on. It's the growth. It's usually the period of growth, when there is still that earnestness and that devotion to a new idea. And then comes the third period, usually, which is the challenge. Gordon Brown says about Dr. Toynbee. Dr. Toynbee tells us how civilization come and go because of the alternating rhythm of what he claims challenge and response. Man is continually being met with a challenge, he explains, and his success or failure in responding to this challenge determines either his continued development on the one hand, or the breakdown and death on the other. So that's the point of marriage, the challenge. We always individually, collectively, universally, or nationally, or whatever the range of the community is, we always will meet the challenges of this unity. What God has put together, joined together, man has to see that it is not interfered with, that we not let it be put asunder. And Toynbee says something very interesting. He says that the fundamental cause of being unable to meet the challenge, the fundamental cause for a breakdown, is the lack of self-determination within ourselves. Of self-determination within ourselves. He says these challenges are not coming from outside, they are fundamentally within ourselves, namely, heavy enough of the Christ spirit in ourselves to meet any challenge. If there is enough Christ strength through atonement and Eucharist in us, then we can from within us meet any challenge. And that's what he saw in civilization, that if a civilization was still strong enough within and sane and sound within itself, that it can meet the challenges from the outside. And so, in marriage, we see that. We see marriage, she depicts all those qualities which, if used, help to integrate society and mankind, help that this unity, this primeval unity, is in spite of the human, in spite of everything, closely knit together. But she also depicts those factors of evil which, when obeyed, disintegrate every unity. Be it the unity of man and woman, be it the unity in the family, be it the unity between parties or between the nation or in civilization. Now, I must read this from Dr. Toynbee. He says, in each of these civilizations, mankind, I think, is trying to rise above mere humanity, above primitive humanity, that is, towards some higher kind of spiritual life. This definition from Dr. Toynbee as civilization is exactly the tone of the whole chapter on marriage. Namely, it's the range from coming out of primitive humanity and through the strengths which we earn from Atonement and Eucharist and through meeting the challenges of materiality and sensuality and everything, humanity is raised higher and higher. We have seen in that chapter that it's always a raising, a rising and a rising sense in the resurrection. They shall neither marry nor given into marriage. Until in the last subject we have an emergence into spiritual life. And that is what here Dr. Toynbee says too. It's an emergence out of primitive humanity towards some higher kind of spiritual life. And so we can ask ourselves really, now what is it or what are the determining factors that for us are necessary in order to promote humanity? And what are those factors which are an enemy to the unity within the civilization? And the seven subjects, as I can see it, are perhaps the most fundamental factors that we can see. What does Mrs. Eddy show? In the first subject, she shows that a respect for legal law and moral laws as an outcome of the law of God, that helps to unite mankind more and more. And that is a means of uniting and knitting together mankind, bringing out a more stable, a more steadier or stable civilization, and so is a contribution to a higher humanity. And you see, it's always in this subject she always shows this. She always shows the means, seven different means, which always have the same effect, namely always life and truth, that they always resurrect civilization and always bring out a higher sense of humanity and humanhood, life and truth. It has a resurrecting effect and brings out a higher sense of humanity through seven means. The first mean, as we have seen, is a respect and adherence of to spiritual laws, moral laws, legal laws. And the challenge we have to meet within ourselves, which we have to be quite determined to meet it, is that we don't give in to lawlessness, which would bring every civilization, which would bring every union back to a state of anarchy, you see. Then the civilization is broken down, just as in a family, when the laws of the family contract is no more held, be it the legal law or the moral law, there is anarchy coming in and disintegration. In the second subject, she shows what we have to be very determined to meet as a challenge is that we do not worship material qualities. She asks us that which unites mankind and advances mankind is the love and the value for spiritual qualities and not for material qualities, that spiritual substance is measured more, is adored more, is admired more, and that if that is the case, that has always an enriching effect, that enriches those concerned in that community, and so really enriches mankind.